Together.
On general principles, I refuse to change the format.
Absolutely. How dare you? What, you get to call the format now? Fuck you. Come on, Bojangles, dance. Dance.
I'm dancing, which is great for an audio.
I don't know why we began this on such an aggressive. I had some news for you.
Do tell.
So you remember how I was talking about how I was getting back into Elden Ring recently? So I started thinking, like, man, there is a surprising lack of bosses because it's this giant open world. I get lost in shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I forget where I've been. I forget all the, you know, to look in different places for shit. So I checked the old internet finally.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out I missed the very first boss of the game. And it was, you know, if you want a challenge, go in at level 20. Recommended about 25. James, I was at level 82.
Oh, Jesus.
I missed it for that long that I was just diddle-dicking around in this game with no clear objective, no idea what I'm doing.
Still enjoying the fuck out of it.
Eh, somewhat. It was becoming a bit old. And like, I don't feel like I'm progressing toward anything here. Like, I think I'm missing a whole lot of things. Because I don't have that, like, exploration. Like, I prefer, like, no, here's the game. Do this. And just having to look around for shit under my own.
See, I only like those games if there's, like, maps and, you know, like, teleport or whatever.
Because, oh, there's that.
Now, if there's that, then I don't mind, you know, diddle-dicking around. I'm a Diablo guy. I'll fuck around forever before I fight somebody. I will check every nook and cranny just for shits and giggles.
Uh-huh.
And so those appeal to me, but they're more linear. You're going to hit the boss. You're there long enough, you're going to find the fucking boss.
Yeah. I've been wandering around, apparently, just aimless as shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's been real stupid. But yeah, I got real back into it and then realized, I should look at this. Because I kept collecting a whole lot of one item that you like need to beat the first boss to use. It's like, well, what the fuck do I do with these?
Why do I have 700 of these?
Yeah, I have like 12, and it seems like very important. Like, why am I amassing this much of this particular thing?
Well, it occurs to me that traditionally when you're in a game, like I've not played Elden Ring, but in most of those games, you talk to somebody. They give you a clue. They tell you something that kind of leads you towards the next thing.
But that's the thing, is like, there are NPCs that do that, and I've found a whole bunch of them, but it's so big, and it's so vast, and they don't, like, here's a person you haven't met, go talk to them. Like, you have to find them organically.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the reason that I never found my way to this first boss, I've tried to get there for hours, James.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that, like, an embankment ended, and just settled into, like, a small hill that I could walk up. Because I just looked at the thing and went, nope, that ridge goes all the way. I don't know where to go. I guess I'll go over here and just skip the entire beginning altogether. Like a real dumb shit.
You got two paths, left or right. You went right.
Yeah.
And you kept going right. You never went left. You just went right.
Nope. And I went right through that brick wall, and then my corpse went through another brick wall. And yeah, it's just been a whole mess. And it makes me realize, God, as much as I say I like video games, I fucking stink at them tremendously.
Well, I say I like video games, and then I have not played a video game in probably 3 months, 4 months. Granted, we're starting a business, but it hasn't even occurred to me to get on the PS3 or 4 or whatever the fuck I got.
Yeah, whatever's there. Yeah. So yeah, that was my little video game update.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing.
And you and I talked off mic about The Crossing Guard.
Oh, yeah.
That was nice to get off my chest. What a deeply strange movie that is.
And I put in my 2 cents with The Fan also.
Yeah. Oh, The Fan. Fantastic movie.
Indeed. And deeply disturbing.
Yeah, I was reminded the other day of The Last Boy Scout and how I really just want to watch the first 5 minutes of that movie to watch a running back pull out a pistol and just start plugging dudes while running for a touchdown.
The only reason I ever watched that movie is because I love fucking anything Taylor Negron did, like from Fast Times all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched that man just read out of the fucking phone book. It was amazing. So yeah, that's the only reason I know that movie is because he was in it.
Eh, I don't have a good transition here. Should we just do the podcast?
Let's do the fucking
wasted
thing.
Wasted enough time. Hey, everybody, welcome to Horror Vomit, where we talk about horror movies so you don't have to. My name is Chris Pfaff, and I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm James Marino. I'm the other one of your hosts.
And we got a kind of a brand new-ish one for you. Brand spanking new to us, anyway. Just came to Shudder. We are talking about 2023, 24,
I think, yeah.
IMDb said 23. I was shocked by that as well.
If it was, I don't know.
Either way, talking about Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa. Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, a young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
Written and directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns, starring David Dasmalchian as Jack Delroy, Laura Gordon as June Ross Mitchell, sorry, I got all tongue-tied and stupid there for a moment, and Ian Bliss as Carmichael Haig.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, James.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you like Late Night with the Devil?
As much as I don't know, I'd like to be a curmudgeonly, and this would be the type of thing where I'd go, I didn't like it just because, you know, just to be a dick. I fucking love this movie.
Ooh.
I fucking loved this movie.
Ooh.
It spoke to me in a bunch of ways.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So we got stuff to talk about, buddy.
Because I really fucking hated this movie.
Really?
I did not like it at all.
Holy.
If I'm being... All right, there are parts of it that I liked,
mm-hmm.
but even the parts that I liked felt lifted or out of place.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Let's roll on this.
Oh, this is going to be interesting because...
So, I don't want to start with me just bitching about a movie.
Oh,
so,
no.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to start on a more positive note.
Okay. The reason this movie really set with me is they were very, very, very true to that type of television. And I grew up glued to a television from, you know, from about 1968 till now. But I mean, glued, because there wasn't shit else to do. There were no video games. You didn't have phone, nothing. You fucking watch TV or you hung out outside. And I'm not an outside kind of guy. So I'd get up and I'd watch Carson. I'd watch everybody, anybody that came on. If you wanted to watch something weird, you'd go to the UHF channels. There really wasn't anything on. So this spoke to me because it was my childhood and it was presented in a way that was real to me because I watched that kind of television and I knew the stories, like some of them, you know, a lot of the things that happened there kind of were based on other things.
Mm-hmm.
Which I grew up hearing about and I grew up seeing. And, you know, like Carmichael was basically a real schmucky, amazing Randy. When I was growing up.
James Randy, yeah.
Yeah. I read every book he ever put out. You know, I was fascinated by, you know, I've always been a skeptic. And when I discovered him, you know, when the whole Uri Geller thing blew up, that's why he was, you know, so that struck amazingly true. You know, if you're not familiar with the early 70s talk show hosts, you know, Dick Cavett, Tom Snyder, there were local ones too, like affiliates up until about mid 70s, because then it was starting to change and become more corporate. Local stations actually had more local programming. So we'd have, you know how like we have Sven Gulli and you had whoever you had in Michigan or, you know, wherever. They had these like horror movie hosts and they had their local talk shows. And everything just struck true to me. It just really hit that note for me.
See, I've watched a good amount of old late night TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie bored the living hell out of me.
Really?
The entire time I was watching it, all I could think was, yeah, no wonder Carson's beating you in the ratings. This is fucking boring.
Yeah, but if you watched, I mean, Carson was the top, will always be the top, you know.
Okay. So I that is where I'd like to start immediately. Yeah. It really, really, really rubs me the wrong way that they brought Johnny Carson into this.
Hmm.
Because if you are making a completely fictional film, just make it fictional. You mm-hmm. don't need to drag Johnny Carson's name into this.
But it was
I don't know why.
Again, purported to be a found footage, though. It was purported to show the actual events of what happened for this tragedy.
Yes, but here's the conceit is we know it's a fucking movie, mm-hmm. so you can just make shit up. I don't know why, but that really bothers me. See, when movies like this use actual figures.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it that rubs me the wrong way. You just make shit up. You're making a movie. Just make it up.
Mm. And to me, it added a little bit more authenticity. Because everything about it screamed that era. Everything about it. So Carson is the obvious choice. Even if they invented something, it wouldn't ring true to me because everything else rang so true that if they didn't mention Carson as a, you know, as the top of the tier, I think that it would have hurt this movie to me because it really got so in depth to that era and that type of television. I mean, it hit it so beautifully that it would be a disservice to the movie, to me, to not mention Carson if you're going to mention who he's going against ratings.
See, I mean, again, I think you could very easily fictionalize a character.
Well, they didn't fictionalize the Grove either. Did that rub you the wrong way?
Yes, it sure did, James. One of my biggest problems with this film is I think it's real convoluted and that they could have used the talk show angle far better. Mm. I don't know why. Okay.
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier about how I used to get dragged around to enrichments because, you know, I was one of those kind of kids. And I saw a lot of three-act plays. And this could have almost perfectly been set up as a three-act play with a quick, you know, like if it was on a stage production, they could have done the interstitials on a big screen behind and just have the talk shows. In a few of the, you know, they could actually do that. And I loved it for that too, because it just pulled it all together to me. Because it's a piece of fiction, obviously, but it has enough verisimilitude for me to be into it because they, again, pegged the reality of what we saw as audience on TV from, you know, like I said, from me from like 70 to whenever. You know, I absolutely grew up with that. It was like, ooh, perfect for me.
See, I don't know, and this is just a weird little side note, too. Mm-hmm. Just from the onset, 9 production company logos.
Oh, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, because they couldn't get the money for it.
Right,
I understand, yeah. But like, ooh, I think we might be in trouble.
Well, actually, what it did for me is like a lot of TV stuff and a lot of, you know, once you get a movie onto TV after it's been through 3 affiliates... Prior to the movie, it's been a presentation of this, brought to you by such and such, and this and that. So it struck me, again, it gave me that kind of feeling of, hey, we know what you're getting into, because remember that from when you were a kid. So it may not have been on purpose, but it did strike a nerve with me. I'm like, oh, God, I remember sitting through like 5 or 6 production companies.
And the long, what felt like an infomercial for Jack Dorsey, the first like 5 minutes of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with all of the twists and turns, I don't need to know that he was signed to a deal in 1972. Stop. Just get to it. In the 1977, television host Jack Dorsey had this on his show. It became infamous and known as Late Night with the Devil. That's all the setup I need. I don't need a long, convoluted story about how he was a... part of the Grove and how his wife, who they very explicitly say was a non-smoker,
mm-hmm.
Lethal or, you know, life-ending lung cancer.
Yeah, just, you know, terminal, thus proving the Faustian bargain, yeah.
No, again, I get it, but it's so long and convoluted, you didn't need any of that. This very much felt like taking what would have been a good 15-minute short and having to stretch it out.
I did not even feel that, dude. Because all the conversations that were had, the depictions of the co-host, the guy that was supposed to be a fake that wasn't a fake, and Carmichael, I mean, all the interplay was beautiful. I liked the way they characterized, you know, they started with thumbnails and then they put it in depth. And they kept a very light sense of humor without being jokey.
Well, and that's the thing is I could have used with a bit more humor being as that this was a rival to Johnny Carson. at least make it funny. Somewhat funny.
But had you watched the Don Carsons of the era, they weren't funny. And a lot of times, if you watch Carson regularly, all we see are his, all you, most people see are, hey, the best of Carson. He did this. This was a great sketch. That was a great sketch. Carson bombed a fucking lot.
Oh, I know. I've watched a good amount of Johnny Carson.
And a lot of his shit and his banter was not funny. In fact, some of it was downright mean. I'm like, I'm surprised some people didn't fucking peg him one, you know? So it all felt right to me.
And then, I mean, starting off with Christo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, it kind of felt like glorifying these fucking frauds and hacks, which, again, it turns out that he wasn't. But I didn't like it. I didn't feel that character necessary. That, to me, felt like the stretching out of a 15-minute short that, oh, shit, we need something else.
Well, see, and I will counter with this. The whole Uri Geller thing was huge. I mean, no, absolutely. I understand amazing. That
this is 100% the stand-in for Uri Geller. Right. I get it.
And for me, I know all about cold reading. I know about how these guys work. Because, again, I read all this stuff that Carmichael was spouting. And some of it was like, come on, buddy. But most of it was what I knew. You know what I mean? How did they debunk, the scientific method? How they, showed all of that. And I think that was very, very important to the story. Because that way when they, well, we'll get to that. But, with the whole hypnotizing scene, etc., It brought it all together and it made beautiful sense to me, and it was that big a deal. So for me, it spoke to the time. He's getting ratings, so he got this guy, and now he's got that, the expert debunker. Man, I'm fucking down with that because I watched it, the original one, and they were playing it note for fucking note. Boom, boom, boom. I thought it was, again, beautifully right, balanced.
But my biggest problem with his involvement is effectively after his, personal screen time when he's on screen with Carmichael, it's effectively him sweating and just going, and then it doesn't bother me that it's bad effects, but the black blood that he just spouts out, and then he dies off screen.
Yeah.
Like that. Come on, man. At least have him something die in the back. Show us something on screen.
Well, I see for me, I appreciated two things. One is they kept it, to me, almost in a conceit of that three-act play. So he had to die off screen to keep that feeling of me of being in a theater watching this thing. If my attention had been pulled while he was dying, it's important for him to die because that's the prover, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I
but
get
off screen, it's absolutely perfect for me visually. Because I didn't need to see him die. I just needed to know he died. So good, because there were three other things that I needed to pay attention to, because this movie rewards you for paying attention. Everything that they said in that little blurb meant something.
Yeah, very obviously.
And while I stopped it right after that, because I'm like, ooh.
Oh, they just gave away the whole movie?
It's going to, no, not necessarily. They placed that plus. When they panned to each audience member as they were showing, as the walk-in, that kind of thing, everything you looked at made the movie better later when you saw it, and the fucking one skeleton's eyes moved, and and so every time they panned, there was no wasted movements. Everything they showed you, paid off on screen. So for me, in my sense of symmetry and fucking, if you give me something, make it make something, they did that. If it bored you and you didn't, pay that much attention, it fucking grabbed me because, like I said, the visual style, the way they were talking, the clothes, everything. I'm like, I'm eight again watching this. I'm like, oh, And then they pulled it all back in. I'm just like, wow. I get why you didn't like it if you didn't notice all those things, or if you didn't care to notice all those things.
No, I did. I just didn't like this movie.
Oh, wow.
I get it. I got it. I got it immediately. And that's why in the very first, what I was calling the infomercial for Jack Dorsey, because it lasts so fucking long, when he's sitting with his wife on his show and he's acting all skittish and weird, oh, yeah, he made a deal to fucking kill his wife for fame. I get it. Mm-hmm. Can we get on with the fucking show? And all of the pageantry really bothered me when they could have had the, you know, our entire segment tonight is dedicated to, you know, this little girl. It felt like a lot of window dressing that I didn't need with Carmichael Haig and with Christo. Like, get to the fucking point of the film. And when it gets to the little girl, mm-hmm. they don't do anything with it. They rip off The Exorcist. That's it. Ooh. And then the one part of the movie that I really, really enjoy mm-hmm. is when she turns into the demon. It's so goddamn out of place in this film that it doesn't feel right. Mm. It feels cartoony and rad, like an 80s graphic, because all of a sudden she turns into Lord Raiden with a split open head.
Looks like the singer from Blind Melon.
Yeah, it's...
When he turns into a demon.
Yeah, it's... It, all right. Okay, so she levitated in a chair.
Yeah.
Cool. You just ripped off The Exorcist, both in look and in things that happen with Mr. Riggles.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
Captain Howdy. It's okay, because it honors the time period that it was in. You know, it took place in the time when The Exorcist came out, and all those books were out. Even before The Exorcist came out, the books were out, and demonology was huge, and everybody was talking about that shit. It was fucking there. And to me, again, you were like, oh, fucking ripoff. To me, it was a love letter.
See, when you're doing it almost note for note, I don't consider that a love letter. I think that is more or less, I hope people don't notice.
Oh, no, I love it.
That's what it feels like to me.
I thought it was like, oh, you... Here's another one for you, James. Exorcist, boom. Here's another one for you. Amazing Randy, boom. Here's another one for you, James. You know, I was fucking eating it up. I loved it.
See, I really, really loved his sidekick, though.
Fucking perfect, wasn't
he? I could have used so much more of that, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden when he has that weird change into, like, super Christian-y, like, okay, well, none of that was ever really established. Why is this here?
It was established in a few ways. It was coded Irish. Oh, look, you Irish fuck, you know. That was coded, and I understood the code because I grew up hearing it, you know. you think it was bad in the 80s. Listen to grown-ups talk in the 70s.
Right.
And if they said, ah, oh, you McBastard, A, they were mentioning that he was Catholic. They were mentioning about 7 or 8 other things about him that I knew from the way they were speaking. And so it spoke again. I don't know if it was an era thing. And I will ask one question though, because it seems like the things that we like about movies. I think this was well written, well acted, and it was fun to watch. It wasn't the prettiest movie we ever saw, so it has 2 of my 3 pillars. And it was not boring to me ever. See, and I was so surprised. I thought you were going to love this movie because you love found footage, and you love just about every little aspect of this. But you've seen a lot more, though. This is...
And that's why it just feels boring and convoluted when the entire premise is we're going to bring on this girl who was, I guess, infested with a demon.
Mm-hmm.
The demon Abraxas. That's one of my other least favorite plots, or not plot points, but things that they do in this is, again, every character seems to have, like, a weirdly long infomercial.
Yeah.
And it really rubs me the
wrong
way.
And it pays off.
Yeah, it really rubs me the wrong way when you bring up the Warrens. That bugs the shit out of me.
Again, we can't keep hammering the same point.
I don't give a flying fuck if it rings true to the time period. This is all make-em-ups.
Yeah.
It's all make-believe. Change it. You don't need to make references to these real-life things or real-life people. Fucking make shit up.
Then it would be more boring for me because they wrote this movie for me.
Again, and with the doctor,
mm-hmm.
That character bothered the living shit out of me because, one, why is she here? Nobody in the medical profession, again, I know it was the 70s, people did shit like this, but there's no way that would have proceeded.
Oh, really? Because Sybil? The unethical treatment? There's a lot of it that you may have missed because you may have not have gotten... all of the references. Maybe you didn't, just don't give a fuck, but like that whole predatory, you know, predatory exploitation of a troubled child was rampant. You read books about it, all this kind, you know, this is when they were becoming aware of child abuse and, you know, how bad the mental institutions were. This was the time of all the changes, so I think they were speaking to that too. again, none of that would, like I said, it's all bubbling here for me. And I think what's strangest to me is I don't usually lean on a bandwagon. And everything that I've read about this movie, about people's opinions on this movie, everybody loves it. And I'm not usually like, usually if everybody loves it, that's a fucking kiss of death for me. And that's why I did that little caveat at the beginning. Because I unabashedly love this movie. I'm going to watch it again tomorrow.
And one of the other things that bothers me is if they're going to lean into this Grove aspect and lean into the fact that she has a demon that knows things about him, they could have leaned into that, where this demon could have spilled some beans about him in front of everyone, except for one short line about, remember when we met in the woods?
And then it was reestablished when the demon came.
Yeah, but that's not what I want out of it. If you're trying to make a tension-filled scene with a demon, you have to have it do something, say something to him that lets on to everyone that somehow he knows this demon that's inside of her, except for one throwaway line about meeting them in the woods.
Mm.
I wanted more because, again, it was one of the few scenes that I actually kind of liked is when she transformed into the demon,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't really do much with it.
And I didn't think they needed to. It was just enough. If they would have gone any further with it at that moment, it would have pulled me out of it. Because it was within the realm of the reality that was set forth in the movie. If it would have been spinny or done something, I mean, like super fast or, you know, Jacob's Ladder heads or, you know, that kind of shit, it would have lost me because it hadn't built up to that point yet. It needed to be a prover, but relatively mundane because it had to counterbalance Carmichael's skepticism. So if it had been super, that's an automatic disprover. So Carmichael has to pay out the check. This was just enough to show that it was a demon. Carmichael didn't have to drop that check because he's like, oh, come on. That's an old. How did you set this up, buddy? When did you guys set this up? Because levitations need setup. That needs mechanics, etc. And it can be done to where it looks absolutely real, even at that era. But so it was within the realm of skepticism. And I think they kept it that were beautifully. It was understated enough to prove to us that it was a demon, but to still have the relative doubt for Carmichael. And it needed that balance, at least for me.
No, again, I understand it. I get what you're saying. I did not like the execution of it personally. Mm. It really bugged me.
I'll tell you the part I didn't like. It was the mass hypnosis.
I was just about to bring that up. That was a part where it felt so unjustified.
Mm-hmm.
Cool visual. Great visual. One of the few parts of the movie that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of just went, nah, never mind.
Well, here's what takes me out of it. If we posited that demons are real here.
All right, so hold on. Let's set up the scene first.
Yeah.
This is relatively new. So Carmichael the skeptic says, you don't believe in hypnosis to the band leader, his sidekick, Ed McMahon, whatever you want to call him, I forget his name. So he shows him the hypnotist spiral,
mm-hmm.
and puts a big one up to the camera,
mm-hmm.
and starts talking to the sidekick about, and sidekick says, you know, there's something on my neck, you know, I cut myself shaving,
yeah.
and rips it open, and he starts getting hot and itchy and rips his shirt off. Rips his side open and worms start falling out.
Hell yeah. Pull in the hypnotist pulls worms out of his neck.
Yes.
And I was like, oh,
it's
no.
It's good.
Yeah.
It looks good. It's spooky as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kind of go, nah, never mind.
And that gave me such Scanners vibes, dude.
Yeah. It was just mass hypnosis because they went back and checked the tape and he was just kind of yelling at the sidekick and making suggestions.
And this is my only and biggest gripe of the movie because I know they rang true with everything except for that mass hypnosis. If they would have kept it to where it was just him and maybe two other people on stage, I'd have been down with it because the audience wouldn't have seen, you know, what we're seeing or the two people that were actually hypnotized seeing.
Yeah.
But the conceit was not only was the audience hypnotized, but it was also mentioned later in the movie, that not everybody in the studio audience saw it and not everybody in the audience saw it, but so many did. And that blew it for me because Hypnosis to me is only a few people. It doesn't exist. It's a parlor trick.
Yeah, it's a crock.
But in this movie, if it did exist, because demons do indeed exist, I would have been down for it if they would have kept it limited. But because they intimated that the studio audience and the viewing audience were mass hypnotized, I was like, oh, go fuck yourself movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only go fuck yourself movie part in this for me.
And it felt like, like I said, just super unjustified. Like, we have this cool thing that we want to do. How do we shoehorn it in?
Mm.
And again, cool effect. I will give them that 100%. But it felt convoluted and shitty. But again, I really, really love the ending of this film where she turns into the fucking Lord Raiden 80s electrical demon.
Oh, hell yeah.
It looks cool as hell. But it's so out of place,
mm-hmm.
where I had to kind of forget that the rest of the movie was trying to be serious. Because it was a cartoony effect. Again, the word I would use to describe it is rad.
I will tell, I know it's a little late in the game to say this, but anybody who, our listener who enjoys this, knows that we spoil the fuck out of everything.
Oh yeah.
We've never put a spoiler alert on, but we'll, you know, and my next comment, and this is why I'm saying it, go watch the movie if you give a fuck about the ending. I do. So, having said that, I don't usually like twisty endings. I don't usually like a little turn in my movie. I always think it's cheap bullshit. But true to the era, it's him there with five dead bodies, a knife in his hand, and he's figgity fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that because it ended on that gritty note. Like, I was used to seeing in those kind of movies from that era, that kind of TV, like Beretta. Beretta is always half drunk and almost fired every goddamn show. You know, it was not a positive thing. He hung out with prostitutes and junkies, you know? So the fact that it ended gritty like that, I was like, oh, nice.
But you are taking the time to leap right over the 2001 ripoff.
Oh, no, I loved it.
Ugh. Again, when you're doing it that extensively, I don't consider that a love letter. I consider that, oh, you don't think I've seen 2001. You sons of bitches.
Well, I think it was interesting because what I think it does is, and again, I'm just basing it on, you know, its percentile on Rotten Tomatoes, both critics and audience. You know, I think what it's doing is, you know, because if you've ever watched or if you've ever been there and watching feeds, a lot of times you'll see like a bunch of shit from the 70s, all weird stuff that, you know, that was on this. I think it speaks to a younger generation and to me, us oldies. And for some reason, it just didn't hit you.
No, it really didn't.
Because I think it's a good movie. In fact, I'm almost there on teetering on, like, out of, there are like five movies I saw this year that just really knocked me to fuck out. And this one didn't knock me out. This one made me enjoy watching it. It's been a while. Like, I'm always moved by a lot of these movies, but rarely is it just an enjoyment. I enjoyed watching this movie for a change. I had a good time. It was horrific. It was violent. It was convoluted even. It even had a bad part. But I watched this movie and I'm like, I'll watch this again. It almost hit me like a priest.
I was very bored the entire time they were going back over the tape.
Oh, no, I loved it.
See, I didn't mind the idea, but it took up so much time and it took forever to watch them go frame by frame by frame by frame to end up on a ghost that didn't look good. Again, I'm not saying it was bad because the effect was bad. I'm saying it was bad because it wasn't worth the time investment.
Well, see, and I thought it was cool because I know how shitty it was back then. You try to even freeze frame on a VCR, and this is old tape. This was like where the tape machines that they had were, you know, the size of giant copying machines. So it was the way they showed the tech that, you know, you, like us, we'd have a little clearer. It's digital. We'd have a better thing. And I think it's showing the youngins how shitty it used to be. And the fact that they got anything filmed or edited was amazing. To me, that's what I thought when mm-hmm. I watched it.
I didn't care for it. This isn't a knock against the movie. It's just a character I didn't like. I didn't like the producer, obviously. He's there to not be liked. But every time he was on screen, like, man, can we be done with this fucking guy? I'm sick of this asshole.
He was beautifully...
Yes, it was a good character that I didn't like. Right.
The only thing I didn't like about his characterization is that gentleman didn't smoke for real. And he's trying to imitate a person that's smoking, having never smoked, and it irritated the fuck out of me. I'm like, just ditch the... I know it's the 70s and every motherfucker smoked, but if you can't hold a cigarette convincingly like you're actually smoking, you can get fucked and you can put it right the fuck out. It irritated the shit out of me. So... two things about this movie. I loved his characterization. I loved hating him.
Yes.
Thought he acted it beautifully because he was that fucking guy.
He sure was.
And, I mean, I thought everybody's characterizations rang true from my memories of those eras.
I love the backing band.
Oh, my God, yes.
Every time that they showed the Ed McMahon sidekick character, I was always looking at the guys in the back because they looked so convincing. Mm-hmm. Just dudes hanging out there with like an electric bass just waiting for when they have to do their little bit of work.
But when they do it, they actually hit in and stung, man. I'm like, ooh, nice band.
Another thing that I thought was actually really, really good about this that I will give them compliments for, I love that the little girl stare directly into whichever camera, because those are live feeds. There's no way to tell which camera is on you, ever really. And to have her just staring dead into the cameras
at all times.
I thought they could have done more of it, because she just goes, oh, okay. And then stops doing it. Like, no.
But then she goes back to it.
I say, you had a good thing. Keep doing the thing.
They kept doing it. Because she would gravitate towards Damelshan, right? And then right back to the camera with that smile. Once she figured out where the camera was, her face went right back to that camera. They re-hit it and re-hit it.
There was the things that they did, like, I want you to do more of that.
You kids, get off my lawn!
No, because the rest of it is boring. I didn't like the dialogue with Carmichael. Again, it just didn't grab me.
Oh, my
God. I understand that it was a perfect proxy for James Randi.
He wasn't, because James Randi was a cool motherfucker. This guy was a prick. And my favorite part of this movie is when he's like, the demon, he knew it was a demon after a couple of seasons. He's like, I pledge my life and soul to you, blah, blah, blah.
I thought that was very funny also.
I was like, fuck, yeah, that was perfect. Note perfect, man.
Watching the sidekick get his head turned around. Again, the effect on it is crap, but I liked it.
Well,
it's cool looking.
And it was believable in the realm of what we were watching.
I understand they didn't have the money they didn't have $20 million or $200 million like Marvel has, but this is good enough.
I'm
perfectly fine with it.
And again, it's another homage to movies of that era. And to the types, like even the nod to Cronenberg, it's giving you a little bit further ahead. But, you know, people from my era kind of conflate like late 70s and early 80s was all one, almost a little mini decade for me, because they were so different. Like from 77 to 81 are two completely different worlds. And I kind of straddled both of them. So it spoke to me from that, because you know, part of the 80s is still the 70s to me. So when they had that, head explosion thing and the scanners looking shit, again, it was speaking to me.
And man, I almost shut this movie off when it got into the satanic cult that had the little girl with the stand-in for Anton LaVey. Like, good fucking God, guys.
Oh, no, that
this was... This is getting so convoluted and stupid. There was such an easier way to do this.
Oh, see, again, if you're pulling Randi up there, and then you mention you've got to bring the LaVey character, you have to have a cult in there. You have to. It wouldn't be... Because what happened all through the 70s? Cult, 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 cult.
No, I got it.
And the satanic panic and all that shit. I mean, beautiful.
This is one of those movies that, like, that's why I was reticent to say that I hated this movie, because in theory, I just don't like it. I vehemently don't like it. I don't hate what it's doing, what it stands for. It just did not catch me in any sort of way. I understood the references. I get all of the symbolism. Mm-hmm. I get what they were trying for. I thought it was fucking boring.
Okay, you know what I liked about today is that, you know, we rarely have like that head-to-head fuck. I like that you didn't, or vice versa. And we actually had a cogent conversation this time instead of stupid. So that was really cool. But it's just really interesting to me how different that is. Because I, honest to God, I thought that maybe we would. I was sure you were going to love this movie. And then when you said you hated it at the beginning, I was so surprised because it has everything that I thought would speak to you in this movie.
I also could have, and I kind of alluded to this a little bit before, but I didn't need the entire plot laid out for me before the movie began.
Mm.
That fucking ruined it for me. excuse me. I think this would have benefited from a little bit of mystery.
Oh, see, for me, what it did is I don't have OCD, but I can lock in sometimes with that weird ADHD shit. And I locked in to this movie because they were leaving me breadcrumbs, and every breadcrumb paid off. And then if I went back to rewatch part of it, and then I noticed something that was alluded to at the end of the movie, at the beginning of the movie, and I'm like, oh, it's one of those movies that kind of tickle my detective bone. And this is one of these movies where I'm going to watch it about four or five times and see a different movie every time. And I love that about this movie.
See, I knew exactly what was going to happen from jump.
Mm.
I felt like they telegraphed it way too much with pinpointing exactly, you know, oh, well, he was part of the Grove. Oh, he signed this contract deal. And then a few months later, his wife got sick. And then he did this. And then he went on a long spree where it was stuff to try and garner ratings, but people hated it because he was, you know, having just out there shit, you know, your Jerry Springer-y, your Morton Downey Jr.
Absolutely.
Again, I get the references. They laid it on so thick that, again, just make some shit up. You don't need to, like hammer the nail into all of these references. I get it. Just give us a fucking possession movie. That's all I want from this.
And they did.
No, they did not. They gave me a convoluted ass story.
Yeah.
That was bullshit.
With demons and shit.
A demon.
Uh-huh.
Kinda.
Yeah. I loved it.
Ugh. Again, I needed more things that were actually scary, or the story that you didn't tell me up front. Again, the front loading I felt like really hurt this film. Mm. If they'd had just started it without any of that, it wouldn't have bothered me so much. But all of the front loading with the Grove and like, why are you bringing so many little elements into this? This could be so much simpler, easier, and better, in my personal opinion.
No, I got you.
Case stated.
And I would love to see this,
as a... This is where I need a gavel.
Bang. I would love to see a version of this, a tight, lean, mean 15-minute, half-hour thing. I would love to see that, too. However, I love me some convoluted, if all the points match up, if it balances well, if it felt good. This movie felt good to me.
Oh, I almost forgot about one of my biggest gripes in this film.
Hmm.
Is that why does the demon have electricity powers? Again, I like that it's cool and it's rad at the end, but telegraphing every single time it was going to get spooky with the camera fucking up. Like, guys, god damn it. Don't stop telegraphing everything you're gonna do. Just do it.
Well, a lot of times I don't like it when a movie assumes I'm dumb.
That's what I felt like watching this movie.
But because so many things were going on and they dropped these things and I'm looking for stuff, it engaged that part of my mind. It engaged the part that wanted to make it make sense and balance together and have everything work out. And it did that.
I say, and it's one of the things that I really don't like. And this, it really happens in like reboots of series
mm-hmm.
where it just kind of feels like, hey, remember? Hey, do you remember? Hey, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this entire movie feels like. They didn't feel like writing an actual movie. So, hey, do you remember this? Here's a take on that. Do you remember this? Here's a take on that.
Well, I think...
write a fucking story.
I think this movie hit me like Stranger Things hit a lot of people of a certain age. It's a tip of the hat nostalgia to a very specific era. You know what I mean? And so this is a nostalgia thing for me. So I'm again, a lot of times I can't be objective. I try real hard. But again, this might just be me, except everybody else seems to like it too. But it really hits a beautiful spot for me nostalgia-wise too. So that might take away some of my objectivity. Because, I'm looking at a love letter to an era. I'm looking at people who are acting exactly like the people I saw on television. Exactly down to the weird sweat and the cocaine clench and the constant smoking. It was, chef's kiss.
So, are we ready to delve into the biggest thing that I have about this film?
Oh, dear. You got more? Go ahead.
All of the interstitial graphics.
Oh, the AI shit.
AI generated.
Mm-hmm.
You are in a creative field. I guarantee they know artists. Just pay an artist.
Well, the thing is... and
pay a fucking artist.
They did. And the artists are the one that punched in the shit for the AI. This was before No, I'm just telling you that from what I've read and the interviews that I've saw, because I was into this motherfucker, so I read a whole bunch of shit. This was before the idea that they could replace audience members or they're going to replace cast members. They thought, oh, shit, we got halfway done. We got fucking this much money. Let's knock this out this way. And to them, it was just a little additional tool. Obviously, it became a much different thing by the time we've seen this because of the writer's strike, etc. But this started prior to that. So the idea is there. Yes, I don't agree with the use of it, but it was never a secret. It was never saying, you know, and it wasn't the whole part of the movie.
No, I understand. Yeah. It's one of my biggest gripes.
Yeah.
That you're making an indie film. You have friends. Pay them.
And again, from what I understand, they were paid and overworked as fuck.
So I do want to end this on a very positive note, though.
Mm-hmm.
David Dastmalchian's fucking great in this movie.
Dude, he slaps, man.
He is so goddamn good.
And I understand that the reason he got this, or the reason they got him, oddly, is that he had written an article or done an interview where he talked in-depth about horror movie hosts.
Yeah, he wrote like an op-ed in Fangoria.
Right, and... it got to the point where they were talking and they said, well, for some reason they got their wires crossed and they said, would you be interested? And he's like, motherfucker, get me in. And that's how they got him. It wasn't, you know, it was like an accident. It was like kind of a miracle, basically.
Yeah, he's really, really good in this role, though.
Well, I don't think anybody else, now that I've seen him in this role, I can't imagine anybody else who could have fucking done it.
No, and he has the... correct level of charisma for a second place 70s host where he's not necessarily funny and he's not necessarily witty, but he's really trying.
And he's comfortable because he's for the audience that he's for.
Exactly.
You know, he's pandering to, hey, you know, Mabel and Effie and everybody in the Midwest. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm a regular guy.
Yep. I did like the, when they were showing the segments of, like, he had, like, the punk rock looking chick. She was just like, what the fuck happened to you, man?
Mm-hmm.
You used to be somebody. Now you're doing this trash.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that, like, we'll be right back. And after the break, you will not. And as he just storms away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love it because I love, even before, like, tell-all books came out, you'd hear about how much of a fucking prick Carson was. And occasionally there'd be a leaked. You hear a leaked audio, somebody having on cassette, Carson going off on somebody, or just fucking completely dismissing people on, you know, two seconds in an interview, just going, and we're cutting to commercial, and just fucking 86ing them right there.
Uh-huh.
Just being a petty fucker. So it was beautifully touched again, for me.
No, again, I loved his performance. Yes. And I don't think his character was poorly written whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But again, just some of the dialogue, the Carmichael stuff, again, it gets a little long in the tooth with him constantly being a badgering dick. Like, I understand it rings true for whatever, but like, again, you're making a movie. Let's keep it rolling. It felt like a lot of stretching for time in this movie.
Well, it made like a straw villain.
Yeah.
You know, and I liked that characterization because we needed something else to kind of misdirect us a little bit from what else was happening. So you're focused on him and here I am thinking, oh yeah, it's a cold read because it was an obvious cold read and you could tell the one guy was a plant.
Yeah.
Which gave
Barry.
Yeah, but it gave Carmichael more leverage when it came back to say, hey, you had that plant there. What's to say we don't have more plants? How do we know? I mean, you obviously put this plant here. How do we know? How do we know you didn't plant, you know, the stuff to flip people around? And then you got, was there a questionnaire? Did you bump into somebody? And that's exactly how they busted those people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I love Barry though.
Oh, he is the fucking best.
And she's here with us right now.
Cause I couldn't tell. I didn't know it was Stickler until the second time he was kind of a dick. And I'm like, oh, this is beautiful.
Well, she took off with my neighbor 5 years ago. Oh, sorry to hear that. Oh, don't worry about it. My golf game's never been better.
I love the fact that the plant was funnier than the host.
I'm hearing a bee. No, my name's Barry. No, that's not it. Well, it has been for 42 years.
I loved it.
I love Barry.
It was like we were watching an episode of Hee-Haw.
Uh-huh.
Junior Samples just answering.
Again, I just... there was something about this movie. I got the references. I understood it. I thought they over-explained in the front-loading of it, and I was just genuinely bored because a lot of this I felt like I have seen before and done better.
Mm.
Again, I don't think this is a bad film. I hated watching it.
Well, see, for me, sometimes I have to split a movie in parts because I've been so fucking busy. You know, I've got to, in order for me to give this the attention that it needs, I'll break it up into three pieces. And for the first 35 minutes, I mean, I stretched out for 35 minutes and then stuff started happening. I'm like, okay, I get you a movie. Give me a second. And I had to take a break and then I watched the rest of it the next day and I thought I was going to have to break it up into two more 20-minute spots. No, because from that point on, I was in and off. And then I went back and watched the first 30 minutes again to make sure I didn't miss anything. And I was like, ooh, it even paid off more for me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I just don't understand it because I'm not in your mindset.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it just seemed like a very good premise that they had to stretch out. Again, if this was like a 15, 20-minute short, like if this were an anthology.
It could be, you know, it could have been an Outer Limits episode.
Yeah, if it were that, if they were just boom, 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 get to the point. Man, I think it would have been great, but having to stretch it out with all of the Carmichael's IPSIP research and what have you, and all of the doctor going in and saving them from this cult and this long convoluted story. Again, I understand why people like it. I get it. It did not connect with me whatsoever. So I personally, if you want to watch it, it's fine. I wouldn't recommend it.
Mm. I love it. People like it. Watch it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, the occasional curmudgeon aside, because traditionally, you know, it's funny is because I thought I was going to be taking your side initially from the first half hour. That's why I said I took a break. I'm like, Chris is going to love it. Fuck this movie a little bit. And then I'm like, I got dragged in and pulled. And this is one of the rare instances where we have a disagreement on the movie where we don't have a little bit more of an understanding. A lot of times you'll come around or I'll come around or we'll have a slight more appreciation. This is one of the very few where one of us is just like, nope.
No, I didn't like it. And the part that, again, that I really, the two parts that I really, really like felt kind of unearned and out of place.
Mm.
With the worm part, fucking looked great. That had my attention. And then for them to go, never mind.
Well, see,
like, kind of bothers me.
And it wasn't the non-nevermind that bothered me. It was the idea that the whole world that watched us was hypnotized, that if you rewatched this again, you would be hypnotized.
I was being very reductive by going, nah, never mind.
But, yeah. But I'm like, yeah, fuck that part of the movie.
What you're saying is the reason why I didn't like it, yes.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, fuck that part of the movie, but so much more good in it for me that I was willing to forgive the movie for that transgression.
And then the Electro Demon, like, okay, well, this feels out of place in this film. Mm-hmm. It looks cool as hell. I really like it, but it felt like the Banshees in that old fucking Sean Connery movie that Brad made me watch. I forget the name of it. It doesn't matter.
It was a wonderful movie that stuck in your memory.
Yeah, it's an old HPV. Sean Connery right before James Bond started.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. But there was like a cool electro banshee in that too. It was just like, wow, that's out of place, but it looks rad as hell.
Mm. Well, again, everything touched my nostalgia button, so I can't be objective. So,
nah.
Watch it or don't. I liked it.
Nah, fuck it. I will never watch this again.
I'm going to watch it tomorrow while you're bullshitting.
While I'm not watching it, refusing, sitting on my high horse going, I don't like it.
I don't care if James is watching it over at his house. Fuck this movie.
No, I'm going to watch RoboCop the series. I've been watching Gilligan's Island,
too. Oh, God. Was it as painful? I mean, I didn't like Gilligan's Island when I was a kid. I can't say how I'd like it now.
It's good laundry folding material.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, James, we've gotten a bit off course here. Where can people find us?
They can find us at horrorvomitpodcast@gmail.com. They can find us at Facebook. We got a Facebook page. And please, please, I'd love to get like a chat piece that's not a porn come on. So if you feel like writing, I will answer the fuck out of you.
We'll answer your porn, too.
Yeah.
If you send us your own personally made pornography,
yes, but
in a secure link, we'll review it on the show.
There you go.
Man, why not? It seems like a fair offer.
There you go.
I still think it would be a really great idea for us to do Behind the Green Door, the Marilyn Chambers.
Yeah, I know. I know the movie.
Yeah.
How about Rabid?
I mean, we could do Rabid. Yeah. I mean, it's a good Cronenberg.
Yeah.
With Marilyn Chambers.
I was going to say, yeah.
I mean, it's close. It's a fine substitute.
Or we could watch something like Blue. What was the movie, Blue Sunshine or Blue Cheer, where they were taking acid and killing each other and shit?
Oh, I think Blue Sunshine's on Shudder.
Oh, God.
If I remember correctly.
Because that is, oh.
Yeah, it's a weird-ass movie.
Yeah, and it's like cool one time, but it's not something I want to revisit.
No, it's not an everyday, it's not a Wishmaster 2 sitch.
No, it's like the movie Squirm. I could watch that once. I don't need to rewatch that movie.
Yep. It's fine. Or like Human Centipede. It not only is it not a great movie, but just like, well, that's plenty of this.
I never bothered. I heard it and I'm like, I get it. I don't need to see
it. No, you really don't. Like the premise, it's what you think it is.
It's like Night of the Lepus. It's exactly what you think it is. It's a giant rabbit. Mm-hmm.
Man, we should watch Night. No, we should not.
No, we should not watch that movie.
That movie sucks.
You thought this movie was boring?
Oh, Night of the Lepus is tremendously boring. I've seen it. Yeah, it's terrible.
He'll put you to fuck to sleep.
So before we go, that's our capsule review of Night of the Lepus.
Mm-hmm.
It stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, James, are we done?
We're fucking done. Push the button.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Button. Let's be done.
Push the fucking thing.
I'm fucking getting to it. I really wish
you
would stop rushing me every single time. You know what? No, I'm not doing it.
I'll push the button.